So, there are two types of initiation happening today. One is the Harinam initiation, and the other one is Gayatri Mantra Diksha, or Brahman initiation. And both of these types of initiation consist of connecting us with disciplic succession. So, sometimes people ask the question, why you Hare Krishnas believe in a certain philosophy? Sometimes people question, why don't you worship the demigods instead of Krishna? Why don't you think everyone is just equal? Well, that is a very important question to ask. And in philosophy, that's called, a fancy word for all of you, that's called teleology, meaning, how do you know what you know? And very few people do ask that question amongst themselves or of themselves. People generally believe things just because that's the way their family taught them, or that's the way their particular priest or minister or Brahmin or Panda taught them. And that's what they accept blindly. You know, if their mother said, you got to worship Durga, okay. Mommy says, got to worship Durga. But there's a problem with that. The problem with that is that in this world, we are all conditioned souls. Even your mommy. Even your mother. I'm not talking about Mata Shri. Your uncle. Mama Shri. Your uncle. I'm talking about your mother, your father, unless they happen to be pure devotees, like Srila Prabhupada's father and mother were. We all have these tendencies in this world to make mistakes. We have a tendency to cheat. We have imperfect senses. And we are an illusion. That's the nature of the living entity in this world. I mean, for example, I'll give you an example of illusion. All of us are thinking that we're Indian-bodied or white-bodied or Fijian native-bodied, or we're thinking we're this nationality or that nationality, or we're thinking we're the Pontiac King. Or we're thinking we're married to someone. I'm not saying give up your Pontiac kingship. And I'm not saying give up your marriage either. But we identify with this particular temporary designation. And Krishna says in the Gita, Nasato vijate bhavo, na bhavo vijate sataha, ubayo api drishto antas, twanios tatvadarshavi. The temporary things, they're not real. I mean, yeah, you have to live with them for some time. Just like you get a car, you use it, you pay for it, and when it's old, you don't get an anxiety, you just get another one if you have enough money. If you don't have enough money, you're in anxiety, right? Just like I have one doctor, disciple, he's from Suva. And he doesn't get an anxiety when his car gets old. He just gets another one. So in the same way, we are attached to these different labels that we have, not understanding that they are temporary. In this life, you're born in the country of Fiji. Next life, you could be born in Africa. Next life, you'll be born as a different species. This is life. And hopefully, next life, you're not born. You go back to home, back to Godhead. That's the goal. So, therefore, because of our tendency to be an illusion, and we certainly make a lot of mistakes, no doubt about it, and we have such imperfect senses, that's why I'm wearing glasses. If I had perfect senses, I wouldn't be wearing glasses. You see? Take off my glasses and I can't tell the difference between a man and a woman. That's why it's good when I go to the beach, I don't wear my glasses. So that's called imperfect senses. So, anyways, and then we have a tendency to cheat, especially if you do business. You buy something at a low price and you sell it at a high price. You buy your paneer at a low price, or you buy your milk and maybe. Make your paneer, and you say, for you, there's no profit. Anyway, so we have all these imperfections. So whenever we come up with a philosophy of who's God, then it's going to be faulty, right? It's definitely going to be faulty. And so therefore, you find that that happens with exceptions. The exception is when God presents his own philosophy, because God doesn't have imperfect senses. God doesn't have a tendency to cheat, except when he steals butter. And God doesn't have a tendency to be an illusion or any of these imperfections. So therefore, the statement in the Vedic literatures is dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, that real dharma can only come from God, Krishna. Dharma comes from Bhagavan. Now, let's analyze that word Bhagavan. There's many Bhagavans who come from India. Actually, you know, Bhaga means opulence, and Van means full of opulences. So how do we know that Krishna is that Bhagavan? Because he has more opulences than anyone else. If you look, let's say we look at the deities, who is more attractive than Krishna? Krishna and Radharani, of course. That's the absolute truth. I mean, who's more attractive than Krishna? And who is more intelligent than Krishna? Who wrote so many books like the Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is accepted by everybody. All the Hindus accept Bhagavad Gita. What other demigod has written a book on the level of Bhagavad Gita? Huh? Has Indra written a book, the Indra Gita? I mean, they're great personalities, the demigods. We don't want to disrespect them, because they're all serving Krishna. As Krishna says, Aham Adir Devanam. I'm the source of all the demigods. However, the demigods are servants, and they don't, it's not as attractive. They're not as rich as Krishna, they're not as powerful as Krishna, they're not as beautiful as Krishna, they're not as knowledgeable as Krishna, they're not as renounced as Krishna. Krishna is known as Ramchorji, right? He's so renounced, he ran away from the battle. Pandavas never ran away from the battle. And then he ultimately defeated his enemy through trickery. Jarasandha through trickery. He had Bhimsen rip him into two. So anyway, so Krishna has all these qualities. And so this is simply logical, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In addition, Ahus Tvam Rishiyat Sarve Devarshir Naradas Tata. As Arjuna says in the Gita, in the 10th chapter, he says, all the great sages say the same thing. So the great sages say, Krishna is Du Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is God. And then so, if your mother or father say something different, who do you take as more intelligent? I mean, I love my mother, father, but I take the great sages as a greater source of information. So anyway, so all the great sages, this is what Arjuna says in the Bhagavad Gita, all the great sages have said, Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitram, Idam Uttamam, Purusham, Tashukam, Devyam, Adi Deva Maham, Vibhu. That's you, Krishna. And all the great sages are declaring that. So anyway, so that's why we believe what we believe. And we have this wonderful thing called the disciplic succession, which is an unbroken chain of spiritual masters and disciples that comes from Krishna. Okay, Krishna speaks, and then he transmits this knowledge, speaking to Lord Brahma, Brahma Narada, Narada Vyasadeva, down through the chain of disciplic succession, Dham Parampara Praptam Imam Rajarsho Vidhu, and to the present day and age. Let's say 500 years ago, you have Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then we listed some of his disciplic descendants at the beginning of this discussion, like Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhat Goswami, and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and down to the present age, through Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gorkhashordas Babaji Maharaj, whose pictures you see on the altar, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then the ISKCON founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. And then we are simply representing Prabhupada. So This is called the disciplic succession. And we use as a basis for our knowledge the knowledge that was spoken by Krishna and passed down in that disciplic succession, like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then 500 years ago, Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is pure knowledge without any of the defects of what you may learn in different cultures or through different theologians or different speculators or different people who say that they're Bhagawan. We don't care for any other Bhagawan other than Krishna and Bhagawan Ram and any of the incarnations or expansions of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's what we're presenting. So there's three aspects to the knowledge that we're presenting. In Sanskrit, they're called Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. The first aspect is basically theoretical knowledge. That is, what is the material world? What is the soul? Who is God? What is the relationship between all of them? What is the spiritual world? Very theoretical knowledge. And then the second aspect is what we're going to be talking about today, which is called Abhideya. Abhideya means practical knowledge, what you do once you understand the theoretical knowledge. In other words, sadhana bhakti for all of you. Sadhana bhakti means Hare Krishna. Anyway, I guess we have to tolerate Krishna's seeing if I understand the second chapter of the Gita, Tamsa Tiksha Bharata. So, sadhana bhakti means devotional service and practice. It's going away. Thank you, Krishna. So, sadhana bhakti means devotional service in practice. And there's higher stages too when you get to bhava bhakti. And even sadhana bhakti has two aspects, which are vaidhi and raganuga. But today we're going to be basically speaking about vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Now, let me explain. Vaidhi means rules and regulations. Raganuga means spontaneous. And I'll touch on that a little bit. So, rules and regulations are necessary in spiritual life. Just like in ordinary life, you have rules and regulations. Like if you get a driver's license, you have to follow the law. And in science, there's rules and regulations. Like if you want to make water, you have two part hydrogen, one part oxygen, H2O, and it makes water. Or there's the law of gravity. Incidentally, that law was written by Krishna. He's the lawgiver for all these universal laws. So you have all these different rules and regulations in the material world. Any of you work, let's say if we have devotees here who work as teachers. There's a chuta. Yeah, there's a rule. You have to show up at school, right? No? You have to follow the rule, else you don't get paid. So there's rules. So people think sometimes in spiritual life, there's no rules. You could just like feel good. Smoke anything you want. Drink anything you want. And when you've heard the Ram Katha, you take a lot of kava to make yourself real spiritual. Well, that's like in the 1960s, we had these people called hippies. They knew about that before you kava drinking people knew about it. They took a pill to be spiritual. It was quite more efficient than drinking kava, because kava you got to pound first, right? And then sometimes you're breaking the floor of the poor Ram Mandir. Right? All the marbles cracked. Fortunately, you can see we don't take it. Well, it's cracked here, but anyway. So, the hippies were more efficient. They just took a pill, they called it LSD. I don't know if anyone's heard about that before. It's a drug. And they thought, this way I'm becoming self-realized. So in Fiji, you do it in a more organic way. You take kava, and you think, this way I'm becoming self-realized. This way I understand Ram. Ram, Ram, Ram. So spiritual life is not like that. You have to work. Just like if you have to make a living, you have to work. It's not that you just sit at work and take kava all day and then you get paid for it. Maybe in Fiji. I'm not sure. But anyway. Nowadays they've outlawed it, isn't it? There's nothing in your workplace. When you work for the government, you're not allowed to have it. Previously it was like that. The government wasn't so efficient that they hardly collected any taxes. Now that we have Vishwanath, you all have to watch out. Yeah. There's no more number two money in Fiji. So you have to work at anything in this world. And I always use the example of my father, who became a very successful rich businessman. And he got up at 3 o'clock in the morning and got back at 11 o'clock at night. He was working so hard every day. The one day my mother had to introduce me to him. It wasn't quite that, but that's just a joke. But he was working hard because he had that goal. So spiritual life is like that too. You got to work hard. You got rules and regulations. You got to do some austerity. And not such difficult austerity. In previous ages, the austerity was quite more difficult. I mean, I read in the Bhagavatam about many austere sages, and they meditated for thousands of years. I mean, even the demons had to meditate. Look at Ravana. He had to cut his heads off. Is anyone ready to do that to become Krishna conscious? No. Is anyone even ready to reduce your diet to become Krishna conscious? No. Is anyone ready to reduce your diet to stop a heart attack? No. So in Kali Yuga, people can't do these austerities. Like Ravana, and if you read about Hiranyakashipu standing on his toes, living in his bones. And so in the previous ages, it's quite more difficult. But in Kali Yuga, we are presenting such an easy process. Very, very easy. You chant Krishna's holy names, you eat prasadam to your full satisfaction, and you follow little tiny rules. Nothing significant. No really significant restrictions. You know, no meat, fish, or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. That's easy. At least easy for me, because I'm a sannyasi. But, you know, it's easy. Because by following them, you become happy. By breaking these regulations, why is it bad to break them? Because you get bad karma. For example, if you eat meat, let's say you like fish. I'm not going to ask who here likes fish. So let's say you like fish. Next life, you'll be swimming around in someone's fish tank. You know, there'll be some devotee chanting japa, and you'll be looking at him with your big eyes out there with the fish tank. And thinking, where's my japa beads? So, I mean, there's a karmic reaction to these things. You do these things, just like in the law of science and, you know, physics, Newton's law, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's obvious. That's the way the material world acts, doesn't it? For everything you do, you get a reaction for it. That's common sense. So, and then also, in addition, all these activities like illicit sex, intoxicating, meat eating, gambling, bring one down to such a low level that it's unimaginable. I mean, look what happened when Yudhisthira Maharaj gambled. He gambled his brothers. I mean, how many of you would gamble your brothers? Would you? No. How many of you would gamble your wife? Maybe. But hey, not really. It's funny. I mean, you wouldn't. I mean, it's inhuman. But the point is, when you gamble, you get so crazy in the mode of ignorance that you're ready to just lose everything. And it happens nowadays, too. This is not just some story from the Mahabharata. The country I come from, there's this place called Las Vegas. You've heard of Las Vegas before? That's the gambling capital of the world. Sometimes I travel through there. I don't gamble. But sometimes I travel through there, through the airport, and there's literally thousands of these machines called one-armed bandits there. That's a, I don't know what you call them here, where you pull a lever, you put some money in it. What is it called here? Yeah, slot machine, called slot machine. Anyway, and people are sitting there all day and night, and they forget to eat, and they forget to sleep, and everything like that, and they spend all their money. And outside of every gambling casino, they have someone who can sign your car away. Because many people go there, they get so much caught up in a fever that they sell their car right there on the spot to get money because they think they're going to win. Crazy. So anyway, so we have these four restrictions, and you'll feel much better, you'll have less karma, you'll be in the mode of goodness if you give up these four, you'll be able to concentrate your mind, you won't suffer from so many diseases. So that's many advantages. Plus, it'll be very helpful to take up spiritual life. Because to be in spiritual life, you have to cultivate the mode of goodness. Just like to go somewhere in an airplane, you have to go to the airport. I mean, you're not going to take a plane off from the temple here because there's no room for it to land. This is not an airport here. So if you want to go, you go to Nandi, and you get in a plane and you take off. So that's why the mode of goodness is, that's why we have the four regular principles. And then in addition to all those do nots, we have the do's. That means what we do. And that is we chant Krishna's name and we offer food to Krishna. And there are a few simple rules for chanting Krishna's names. We call them the 10 offenses to be avoided. Because if you avoid these 10 offenses, actually there's 11, I hate to tell you. Anyway, because all the 10 offenses, we talk about the 10 offenses of chanting, but there's one overriding offense that really stimulates the other offenses. That's called inattentive chanting. Because if you're attentive, you won't commit the other offenses. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that all the offenses come from that inattentive chanting. So if you're attentive, you'll be aware of the other 10 offenses, and we're going to describe them. And it's pretty easy to not commit those offenses. First one is perhaps the most serious. And actually, I've been asked by the management here to speak about a little bit about that. Right? It's the paper you gave me. So, which is actually what I spoke about at my Vyas Puja, so I can speak about the same thing. First one is to blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy names of the Lord. So, what that means, and I'll go into this detail about fault finding, which I mentioned yesterday during my Vyas Puja, because that's what's mentioned here too. And that's, I've been thinking about that a lot. It's just, what they say, serendipity. Anyway, it's Krishna's arrangement. So generally we like to fault find in others. Why? Because it makes us feel really good. Especially in the culture here, you love rumors. You love it. It's just like, it's part of your entertainment scenario. Isn't it? It's all, shh, shh. Everyone has these motor mouths. So if you think someone could possibly be doing something wrong, then you come to the conclusion they are doing something wrong. Because it makes you feel good. Why? Because it makes you feel better about yourself. If you can push others down, you feel better about yourself. Now, the problem with fault finding, in Vaishnavas in particular, is that you're actually finding faults in yourself. As professional people say, that if you point your finger at someone, three fingers come back to point to you. Because I cannot find fault in someone unless I know about those faults, and the only way I would know about those faults is if I had them. And I'll give one example I gave yesterday at the lecture about this. There was one great devotee, who's not such a great devotee, but anyway, one devotee named Ramchandra Puri. He found faults in his own spiritual master. And the fault he found in his spiritual master was not at fault, but he was projecting his own conception. What happened is that his spiritual master, who's by the name of Madhavendra Puri, was crying. Now, normally someone cries in this world because they're in Maya, or they're feeling ecstasy. There's two different reasons. So, you know, so most people cry, you just tell them don't cry. Or a child's crying because he just wants to eat or something. But when a pure devotee cries, he's crying out of separation from Krishna, intense longing to be with Krishna, feeling these bhavas, these symptoms of ecstasy. That's why a pure devotee cries. So you'll see, if you ever see a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada. I mean, I remember I was with Srila Prabhupada one time, many times, and sometimes you'd see tears coming from Prabhupada's eyes, and sometimes they would even spurt out like a syringe. It was pretty amazing. And one time with Prabhupada started to talk, and he went into trance for 10 minutes, and devotees didn't know what to do. So, you know, from a material perspective, it doesn't appear to be normal, and it's not normal materially. It's spiritual. So this devotee's, Ramchandra Puri's spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri, was feeling symptoms of ecstasy and crying about separation from Krishna. Then what happened is he told his guru, you know, you're in Maya basically, Gurudev. Don't want to do that. He said, you should think about Brahman. Now, many of you people from a Hindu culture think, wow, Brahman, that's great. But Brahman is subordinate to Krishna. Krishna says also in the Gita, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I'm the source of the Brahman. So he said, quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta prasanatmana shokshati nakanshati samaksarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. My dear guru, here's a Bhagavad Gita class for you. You know, you should be peaceful. Don't lament. Don't hanker. And this guru didn't appreciate that advice because he was getting ready to leave this world. He said, I am feeling this separation, and now this rascal has come to harass me. Get out of here. I don't want to see your face anymore. And so that was the last instruction this Ramchandra Puri got from his guru. Okay. So the reason he was criticizing his guru for being emotional is because he had problems with emotions too. And I will describe what those emotions were. And he was really into fault finding. Later on, he came to visit Jagannath Puri where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. And he had this very interesting way of fault finding, that he set people up so that he could find fault in them. In legal parlance, that's called the sting operation. I don't know if any of you heard about that before. In other words, let's say the police wanted to arrest someone. Then they would plant marijuana in your house, and they'd come and find it, and say, you are guilty. And you say, I don't know where this came from, the police put it there. So that's fault finding on a professional basis. Better be careful. So that happens sometimes. And so he was doing the same thing, but not with drugs. He would take a devotee, there's one great devotee, Jagannanda Pandit, he hosted in his house, and what he did is he fed him a lot of food, kept insisting, you know, you go to someone's house and just to be a good guest, you just eat a little more than you normally would eat. I mean, I have to do that sometimes too, because a person keeps insisting, here's a hot roti. I don't want any more rotis. No, you got to take it. It's hot. I don't care. I don't want it hot or cold. In India, they keep feeding you till you belch. Did you know that? Here it's considered impolite. But in India, if you belch, okay, we're not going to feed you anymore. Otherwise, I say, you haven't belched yet. Like that. So anyway, he was feeding this devotee so much. And then after he fed him, he said, yeah, I can see that Lord Chaitanya's devotees, they eat too much. And if you eat too much, you have no renunciation. Now I understand it's true that Lord Chaitanya's devotees are sense gratifiers. So he was just like setting people up to find fault. Because there's a certain joy to finding fault in others. You know, it's just somehow a perverse joy in that. And the opposite, of course, is glorifying others. It doesn't make you feel good when you glorify others. Oh, he's so good. Oh, what about me? I mean, just I'll give that example. One time I was explaining to Srila Prabhupada about a devotee who had distributed 10,000 books. Some of you heard this story from me before. In 1 month. 10,000 Bhagavad Gita's in 1 month. And I said, Prabhupada, this devotee distributed 10,000 Bhagavad Gita's in 1 month. And Prabhupada said, wow, he has the mercy of Krishna. And I was thinking, oh my God, why did I bring this devotee in to see Prabhupada? He said, you know, I'm the temple president, you know, and it just, I'm superior. What is this? He's just a brahmachari. Of course, here in Fiji, you don't know what brahmacharis are. But anyway, so, it's extinct species. Protected by the government. Right? Protected species. Didn't do such a good job protecting them. Anyway, we had quite a few here in Motoka that were all married now. So, so I was thinking like that in front of Prabhupada. You know, he's just the brahmachari, you know, I'm the temple president. And Prabhupada looked at me, and he could see that I was just like turning green with envy. And Prabhupada said, oh, you all have the mercy of Krishna. And I thought, that's better. Thank you, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, but it's like the gopis. Some of them, the gopis are better. So I just thought, oh. Prabhupada had the last word there. So it's very interesting. So we do feel like that when someone else is glorified. And when we find fault, it's just like, it's joy to us. So unfortunately, this pervades a neophyte consciousness, even within neophyte devotees. What neophyte devotees mean, I'll tell you what neophyte devotees mean. A neophyte devotee means someone who sees Krishna as in the deity, and sometimes they don't even see Krishna in the deity, they go on strike if they don't like the management. I mean, that's even less than neophyte, isn't it? Like, if you said the wrong word to me, I'm not going to go to see Krishna. Huh? What? You know, God's here. And, you know, so what? Even if Ravana was in charge of the temple, you should go to see the deities. It doesn't matter. If Krishna came and Ravana's there, you know, who cares? Just don't pay attention to Ravana. So, anyway, so a Kanishtha Adhikari, talking about a Kanishtha Adhikari, basically they see Krishna's on the altar, but they don't really get it that going outside the temple room, Krishna's there. You know, as soon as you step outside, that's my world. This is Krishna's world. He gets a little spot. You know, one building in Lotaka. The rest of Lotaka belongs to Maya. And to me. That's Kanishtadhikari, isn't it? And as far as Krishna being in everyone's heart, you know, it's a good philosophical point, but I don't really believe it. I don't really practice it, and I don't believe it. Krishna's in everyone's heart. He may be in my heart, but not yours, Mahaprabhu. It's like when I was a new devotee, I was traveling with a sannyasi. The sannyasis generally chastise brahmacharis. And he said, everyone else is a spirit soul except for you. You are your body. I said, thank you very much, Maharaj. So, nowadays sannyasis are kinder. We don't do that stuff. So, anyway, so that's a Kanishtadhikari. You know, Krishna is not in everyone's heart. And, you know, we may see the deities, we may not go see the deities, we may have an industrial action against the deities. Can you imagine going on strike? And people go on strike nowadays for no reason whatsoever. I mean, I was just in Sydney, and immigration went on strike. Basically, for certain hours of the day, you couldn't leave the country. So I had to go to the airport like 4 hours before my flight, you know, 5 hours before the flight, so I could go through immigration. So it's crazy. Going on strike, the government shouldn't let, and So anyway, so if you go on strike against Krishna, it's not that Krishna will have any trouble getting his food. Or Krishna has to hire some people to do it. Because Krishna has so many Lakshmis. Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambrama Sevimana. Krishna has millions of Lakshmis. If you don't serve him, someone else will serve it, and they'll get the benefit rather than you. So, in other words, instead of being Kanishta Adhikaris and finding fault in others, not seeing Krishna in everyone's heart, we should try to serve others. And if we disagree with someone, that's all right. I disagree with a lot of people. But I like to serve them. I've given that example of how we like to serve all devotees, not just our guru, because the guru becomes pleased when we serve his servants. Just like we say that Krishna is more pleased when we serve Krishna's devotees than we serve Krishna directly, then the guru is more pleased when we serve his devotees rather than serve him directly. And that means serving all the devotees. We should consider ourselves Gopi Bharata Pada Kamala Dasa 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 Anudasa Dasa Anudasa Dasa Anudasa Dasa Anudasa, you know, far removed, servant of every the what you consider to be the smallest devotee. And I gave this example to Subha one time, that one time this nice lady was, she was leaving her body, she had cancer, and not even one of my god sisters, it was a disciple of one of my god brothers. And I heard that, and I just went to read to her every day in Mayapur during the GBC meetings, static GBC meetings. It's even better than GBC meetings. Of course, frankly, anything's better than that. But anyway, so I went to read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna book, whatever, to her every day, and I felt so much ecstasy and happiness, and Krishna was blessing me so much. So instead of this fault-finding, Kanishtha Adhikari consciousness, just serve each other. It's just very, very nice. And that, and don't make all these different groups, you know, these sectarian groups. This is our group. These, you know, just like sometimes people make these disciple groups. This is my guru. He's a Mahabhagat. The rest of them are mini Bhagats. Mini Bhagats, but little ones. You know, Prabhupada didn't want these different groups in ISKCON. We're all one family. Just like in a village, you have these relationships. This is my cousin. May not be blood cousin. That's okay. This is my cousin. And you love it. You unite. So ISKCON is like a big global village. We're all part of Srila Prabhupada's family. And if someone is having some trouble in Srila Prabhupada's family, we help them. We don't just like sit on the side and cheer. You know, it's not like a soccer game, you know. My enemy has gotten defeated. Honey, bull. go, Fiji Sevens, go. Defeat those New Zealand Blacks like this. You know, so, you know, isn't that conscious sectarian consciousness and stuff like that? It's crazy. We should all work together to push forward this movement. Anyway. So that's the first defense on chanting. We've got nine more. Anyway, I'm sorry, I won't speak that long about the other offenses. But I think that's the most important. Because if you serve Krishna's devotees, Mahatseva Mahurvi Muktes, you get liberated, you get Krishna conscious, you please Krishna. Krishna says in the Adi Purana, one who says he is my devotee is not my devotee. One who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. Remember that. Very important point. Okay, quickly over the other offenses. The second offense is to consider the names of the demigods. We already talked about the demigods. They're all Krishna's servants. To be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. So we respect the demigods, their servants, and if you want to serve them, give them Vishnu Prasad. Like they give Lord Shiva the Prasad from Lord Jagannath in Bhubaneswar. Every day they transport it in a taxi like that. Very nice. Then Lord Shiva becomes very pleased. Lord Shiva does not like to eat bhoga. He likes Mahaprasad. And then Chaitanya Mangala talks about how he was dancing in ecstasy when he ate the Mahaprasad, and even Parvati got upset because he wouldn't share any with her. But that's another story. Okay, and so the third offense is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. And the first thing the spiritual master says, and here today I'm acting spiritual master, is serve Prabhupada's movement, cooperate. This will please Prabhupada very much. That's my order. Tolerate any differences of opinion. Work together. Love each other. Not only cooperate, but love each other. And make this movement a success to carry out Srila Prabhupada's vision. Next defense is to blaspheme Vedic literatures or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. Next defense is to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination. They're not. Krishna is fully there in his holy names. We've all experienced that. When we chant, we feel ecstasy, nama chintani, Krishna's chaitanya rasa vigraha. Next defense is to give some contaminated, perverted, inventive interpretation about the holy name. Just follow the Shastra. The name Krishna means God, the most attractive person. Hare is Radharani. In the vocative form, O Radharani, please engage me in Krishna's service. And Rama means Lord Ram, Balaram, and Radharavana Hari. So, anyway, there's other descriptions given by the Acharyas, but don't invent. And the next event is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. In other words, to chant Hare Krishna between each drink of kava, thinking it's all right. Of course, if you're not initiated and you're a drunkard, Prabhupada said you can think Krishna is the taste of this water or the liquid. Hare Krishna. Okay. So, don't commit sins, but the holy names will excuse you once, twice, but then after that, Krishna will see you're not so serious. It's like confession in the Catholic Church. And so the next defense is to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be like a ritual. We have a lot of rituals, which are fine. I mean, for example, wearing a dhoti is a ritual. But it's not going to bring you back to Godhead just wearing a dhoti. You know, I think Ravana also wore a dhoti. So just wearing a dhoti is not going to get you back to Godhead. It's something we do, reminds us of Krishna, fine. But the essence of Krishna consciousness, chant his holy names. That's the Abhideya, chanting Krishna's names. So we have so many things. So the next defense is to instruct people who will misuse, who are faithless people, about the glories of the holy name. We try to get everyone to chant, but you know, you don't tell people more than would be good for them. Because then they may commit offenses, they may misuse the holy names, so be careful about that. And so then, the last offense is to not have complete faith in the holy name and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions in the matter. It's not offensive to have material attachments, we all do, but if you are not trying to clear them, that's the clearing stage of devotional service, then that's offensive. If you're trying to increase them. Now, how can you increase material attachments? I'll give you the method. You associate with people who are materially involved. It's very easy to increase your material attachment. Go to the bar. Go to the karaoke club. You have them here? You have karaoke clubs here? Yeah, I'm sure you do. Nightclubs, and they sing together in a drunken stupor. So, one time someone invited me to see a nightclub. I opened the doors and I, oh my God! And I closed them real quickly. They said, Maharaj, would you like to preach here? And I said, no. Not a place for a sannyasa. So there's the stage of chanting Hare Krishna, it's called the clearing stage. We should be clearing away the offenses. And that's every day that means work. And we discussed in the beginning of this class, working at it. Okay, and that's chanting. And then if you want to have a really nice positive mood, study Lord Chaitanya's Shikshashtaka. And these different verses enable us to understand the right mood to have in chanting Hare Krishna. So that's enough for the chanting. And so as far as the second initiation is concerned, and of course people taking first initiation are vowing to follow the four regulative principles. So as far as second initiation, that's called Brahman initiation. That means that you're being appointed as a representative of the Hare Krishna movement like a priest. or minister. So it's a very important position. It's not only for your own good, so you can worship the deities, so you can chant the Gayatri mantras and get closer to the spiritual master, but you can be an exemplar of Krishna consciousness, and people will judge the movement by your actions. So therefore, for that reason, and there's other reasons, you should develop brahminical qualities, like being equipoised. Equipoise means don't get angry in a flash like that. You know, some people are on a hair trigger for anger. You know what a hair trigger is? I'll describe what that is. That means if you have a gun, and the trigger, you know what a trigger is on a gun? That if someone just blows on it, boom, it explodes. So some people's anger is like that too. You just like say, Hare Krishna. Ah! All I said was Hare Krishna. So we should control our anger, tongue, genitals, mind anger, words, and all those things. People respect that. I mean, if you're able to control your senses, people will worship you for that, basically. They'll say, wow, he's able to control his eating, or he's able to control his anger. He doesn't get angry. So that's sama. And then dhamma, that's also control of the senses, the five senses, actually the six senses, including the mind. Equipoise all the time. Dhamma, control of the senses. Sama dhamma, dhapa, just always being engaged in Krishna's service. Like that, giving the results of your activities to Krishna. So chum, being clean, neat, clean. Just like I was just in Suva, and some of the devotees were taking the garbage out and putting it on the street, and the dogs were tearing it apart, and I said, this is not Krishna consciousness. The devotee was shocked to hear me say that. You don't. You have to be clean outside the temple too, and inside the temple. So one should be very, Prabhupada said, revolutionary clean in the heart, and revolutionary clean outside too, which means bathing regularly. So these are expected of those who are taking second, and others should also follow these practices too, but specifically those who are taking second initiation. And then we have tolerance, religiosity, and one thing that's very important is studying regularly Srila Prabhupada's books. Because if you study Srila Prabhupada's books, in addition to being enlivened by hearing Krishna Katha, you will actually make your intelligence very strong. That's called buddhi. Krishna consciousness is sometimes called buddhi yoga, which means the yoga of the intelligence. Because you have this buddhi and mana, the mind. So the mind is simply engaged in accepting and rejecting things according to its impulses. It's like a dog. It's like recently I've been feeding dogs because they attack us on the street if I don't feed them. So in Suva we have, our street has been renamed Dog Lane. Dogster Street, yeah. Rooster Street. So what the dog does, you know, like we had one dog who just gave birth to some little babies, you know, puppies. And defense. So I thought I'd just feed the dog some puris, even on a kavasi. So, and so that now the dog loves me and his puppies love it. So, anyway, so basically, the mind is like that, you know, defense, eating. You know, if you feed someone, you can make your enemy your friend. It's a trick, isn't it? So you can do that with human beings too. Anyone who feeds me is my friend. So, even when the Pandavas were coming to kill Jarasandha, they were eating with Jarasandha every night, making friendship. Of course, during the day, it was a different thing. So, so basically, the mind is like that, accepting, rejecting things, but the intelligence is the form direction of the super soul. So, if you want to know what the super soul wants, then you read Vedic literature, Prabhupada's books. And then you can examine things. Like Maharaj Parikshit, he's called Parikshit because that means examiner. That doesn't mean he was looking under like every table for Krishna. You know, you think he's looking for Krishna, is Krishna in there? No, he wasn't doing that. He was seeing Krishna everywhere and in everything, as Krishna says in the Gita, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. So that's what it means to be Pariksit, the examiner. So if our intelligence is strong, we will see Krishna in everything. And we will not have any enemies either. Someone does something to us, Krishna's arranged that. And we try to help the person become Krishna conscious, like Dharma the Bull in the Srimad Bhagavatam story. So this is what a Brahmin means. And not only do you understand philosophy, you practice it. Without practice, there's no realization. Prabhupada said, action in knowledge gives you realization. So if you hear something and you act on it, you will realize it. If you hear, Krishna is in everyone's heart, and I act on it by being kind to everyone, I will realize it. If you don't, you say, Krishna is in everyone's heart, I'm not going to act on it until I realize it, you'll never realize it. And when I, one time, just one final story. When I was in charge of a temple, we had a Sankirtan party, that means a book distribution party. And there was one devotee, I tried to get him out in Sankirtan, he would say, I will only start distributing books when I feel inspired. And I said, first you distribute books, then inspiration comes. And so I would go to visit him, and they were distributing books in the airport, try to find him with all the other devotees. Finally, I went to the park across the street from the airport, and I saw his feet sticking out from a bush. He was sleeping. And then finally, by about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, he got inspired and started distributing books. So we don't wait for inspiration to come. That's intelligence platform. So that's what a Brahmin means. Brahmin functions on the basis of intelligence. Doesn't matter how I feel. I'm going to serve Krishna. You know, whether I'm tired, whether I'm hungry, whether I'm angry, whatever. I'm going to do the right, as they say, do the right thing. That's actually a good motto for Brahmin, isn't it? Do the right thing. Think about the right thing that your guru would want you to do, that Prabhupada would want you to do. And that's Brahmin. Anyway, so without speaking further on that, we've gone 52 minutes so far. So we'll proceed with the initiation, if that's all right, Mr. Brahmin. We've imported a Brahmin from Suva into the sacrifice. Okay. So now the initiates, and we got quite a few initiates. Do you have a pen? I want to write down their names to them so I can give it to them. If I can borrow a pen, because many times people get their names during initiation and they don't hear it right. And, you know, we had one devotee, he got the name from Prabhupada, Asura Kulanasana. You know what that means, the killer of the Asuras. And so he went through the first 2 years of his Krishna consciousness by the name Asura. And finally someone told him, it was Asura Kulanasana. Your name is not demon, it's killer of demons. So, okay, you ready? Okay, so these devotees should come up, and they'll come up one by one. There's first is Shalvan Sanjas Chand, after that is Subhash Chandra, then Kushpa Wati, then Shanila Sharma, in that order. And what you do is, first of all, you offer obeisances to each of the deities, offer obeisances to Prabhupada, and then come here, offer obeisances. And all those who are taking first initiation should do that right now, even if I didn't call your name. And you just wait here until I call your name. That makes it more efficient. Okay, let's see. We'll start with. Did I get a pen yet? Maybe you could write it down, because I only have two hands in this life. Good. just so it is. Oops. Okay, everyone just line up there, and I'll call everybody one by one. Let him write it down, and give him the name after I say it. Rade, Rade. Okay, so first, Subhash Chandra. No, I know Shalvin's there, but I want Subhash first. Just whoever I call, just line up. Because it's just, you know, everybody has their separate beads, and it's impossible for me to just like go through them. Okay, Subhash. Sacrificing first. Okay, Subhash. So, you sit down. What's that?
I'm doing a Skype call.
Okay. So, what are the four regulative principles?
No meat eating, eggs or fish. No gambling. No eating. And
Pablo?
No
intoxication.
Yeah.
And how many rounds do you chant every day?
16 rounds.
So your name, I give beads with your right hand, is Sevananda Das. Sevananda Das Kijai. Sevananda, one word. He's going to get, you'll make sure he gets a copy of that. Sevananda Das Ki Jai. That means the bliss of serving. It's a nice name, isn't it? Bliss of serving Krishna. Yeah, because it's the Ananda family. That's all right. Okay. Next is Kushpa Wati. Krishna Wati is next. Wow. What for now? Dandavad is full out. But, all right. Kushma, so what are the four regulated principles? Hindi? You can say Hindi if you want. Yeah. How many rounds? Getting around?
16 rounds.
Yeah, if you can. So, all right. So, Kushma. Wait, what a nice name you have. I can't believe how nice it is. Your name, I give the beads with your right hand. Right hand. So, your name now is Karuneshwari Devidasi. Karuneshwari Devidasi Pijai. So, of course, that's also a name of Radharani. It means the controller of Karuna, or mercy. Wow. Pretty nice. That's all right. She got him out already. Okay, we'll finish with these. The next is, you finally get this, Salvan. Devananda Kijai. All right, Shalom. Wow, got all these names. What? No, the first one I already gave someone. I mean, I I could choose now at the final moment. That's what I do sometimes. Yes. Okay, here's a good one.